Good morning, everybody. It is Monday, April 10th, 2017. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening today. We appreciate all the listeners on our newer podcast for parents and community stakeholders in education. All those people we want to connect with, that's called Education in America. It's over at educationamericapodcast.com. We have a lot of shows archived over there, and I appreciate so many listeners. I just wanted to make sure people knew that. We have two shows on that podcast this week. Thursday at noon with our new Get to Know a District. We're going to introduce all the parents out there and all the good things that are happening in districts nationwide. And also then on Friday, we have another show coming up, and it's going to be really good. That show is going to be at 9 a.m., and it should be really, really good. We're going to have the Right Question Institute come on. They are the folks who work with ESL parents and parents in poverty, people from different cultures, help them to get through what it's like to go through meetings at their schools and having them ask the right questions. All right. And it's important for school districts to know that. So that's Thursday at noon and Friday at 9 on educationamericapodcast.com. Of course, that's linked over at my website, they're both my websites, education-talkradio.org, the Education Talk Radio podcast, which is for professional educators, the one we're doing right now, and it's linked over there. We got our full schedule up over for the week. We got some really good shows, starting with this one. All right, we've got Brendan DeSetti, who's works at the SIIA, the Software Information and Software Industry and Information Association, their ed tech division, and we're going to talk about all the different federal policies and what's going on over there. We'll archive the show at our website, education-talkradio.org, and we've already tweeted it out a couple of times with links so people can listen directly. Please follow us over at EduTalk Radio, which is the same place we tweet out for Education America. Today's show is presented by my good friends over at MCH Strategic Data. They work in a number of industries, but what they do is provide incredible information to their customers in the education industry. You can check it all out at mchdata.com. There's a lot of business challenges out there, and people want to make sure, the industry wants to make sure they get the information to the right people. And that's important for the educators too, so you're not getting information that doesn't pertain to you. It goes to the right person. They have all kinds of things over at MCH. It's an absolutely excellent company. It's mchdata.com, and they tweet at mchdata, and nobody does better than they do, so I appreciate them sponsoring today's show, and I hope everybody in the industry checks that out. And by the way, you can check it out if you're not in the industry at mchdata.com. Okay, without further ado, let me bring on Brendan. Hi, Brendan. It's Larry. Good morning.
Hey, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my friend. It's great to have you here. Okay, it really is. And SIIA is a great organization. Speaking of that, when is their are they having the spring conference this year? I think it's in San Francisco.
Yes, although it's a summer conference.
Oh, summer! I forgot about
that. July 25th. Now you're putting me on the spot with my own conferences.
That's all right. Close enough for government work. People can check it out over there. Okay, at SIIA.org/ETIN, which is EdTech Industry Network.
But SIIA, I couldn't remember. Let me just say SIIA.net.
.net. Oh, I knew that. Damn it! I knew that. Okay. Can you forgive? I knew that. Okay, can you forgive me? Okay, because it's Monday morning. Thank you. Thank you, Brendan. It's great. Brendan is the Director of Education Policy for SIIA, and he works with all their industry members and other education stakeholders. That's key, to identify education trends and needs, and he advocates for the use of ed tech and personalized learning in legislation and government programs at the federal and state level. All right, and we're going to talk, okay, about the federal level today. Let's start with the elephant in the room, with the one and only Mrs. DeVos, Betsy DeVos. She's the new Secretary of Education, 75, 80 days in now. All the hype around her nomination. All right. What's going on? Has there been any changes? Tell me what's happening, Brendan. Tell the world what's happening.
Well, we had a lot of hype. You're definitely right around the confirmation.
Yeah.
One of the most drawn-out confirmations that we've seen in a long time, and we still see a lot of of discussion around her nomination or her confirmation and her short tenure so far. But so far, I mean, it's lived up to some of the expectations. There's been a lot of discussion around school choice and other opportunities or new learning opportunities for students and sort of some proposals within the budget that the Trump administration put out that would be more conducive to school choice or voucher type programs. But when it comes to has anything concrete materialized to date from her confirmation and being in place, that would be no. So we're seeing her being still talking about it and trying to follow through, but to date we haven't seen any concrete actions come forward from her being secretary, though it's been, like you said, only a few days.
It's been more like 85 days. Yeah, there's three more years left if she stays for the whole term.
Yeah.
All right, and that's quite obvious. You know, we always say school choice. She's in favor of school choice. Okay, school choice has been around for the last million years. People could always go to parochial school, private school, whatever. There's always been school choice, Christian schools, whatever the case may be, all right, as well as public schools. The question, though, isn't choice. The question is vouchers. Does money leave the school districts, the public schools, okay, and go into these programs? And have you talked to anybody at the Department of Education? I mean, what's the word over there, the scuttlebutt, so to speak? I know you're not that tied in, but you might be somewhat tied in. What's going on? What are you hearing at the Department of Education?
I like to feel like I do have some connections.
I think you do, yeah. I can't imagine
really...
you don't, but I didn't want to put you on the spot like you're going to be on Morning Joe or something.
Well, I think it's really important to first to step back and say who's at the Department of Education from
That's
the Trump
point.
Administration, right? It's just Secretary DeVos. They've now had, I read this morning, a new top person in the Civil Rights Department or Civil Rights Office over at the Department of Ed has been appointed that didn't need a Senate confirmation. She has a chief of staff, we've now heard some names about a general counsel, but as far as other political appointees, people who would run the K-12 programs, who would run the higher ed programs, who would sort of shepherd some of these more political activities, there's nobody else over there. So right now, most things are being still run on autopilot by some of the career folks of the Department of Education who are been there over multiple administrations.
Right.
But
non-political.
Non-political. So they're not there creating a new school choice program or even creating new opportunities. They're just waiting for that direction to come from whoever might be appointed. So we're still waiting on names to even come out of this administration on who might do that. And until we hear those names, we won't really know what really concrete direction they might go in to enhance or expand some of those voucher-type programs. We've heard some rumors around maybe expanding the D.C. voucher school program, which is one of the only federal programs for vouchers right now. But again, that would just apply to the District of Columbia. But we haven't had any concrete plans come out quite yet. One other, if you look at the budget that was proposed by President Trump, so they did include some opportunities within that budget, including I think it was like $1.4 billion increase for Title I that would be tagged specifically to creating a funding formula that would include the ability to port what they call portability, take your money from the public school and go to a private school. And notably, that would include not just charter schools, but also private schools, religious schools, which under current law, there's no money going to those types of institutions.
Wow. Well, you know, you mentioned that there's a new civil rights person. Is that person a literal, you know, and the reason I'm asking this is because the guy at EPA is Scott Pruitt, is an anti-environment guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, you know that. Okay. Everybody knows that. All right. Which is nauseating. But and you don't have to get into the politics. I will. But
it's all politics.
Please, no politics. But is the civil rights person a civil rights person? Let me ask it that way. What do you know of this person? Whoever this person may be, and we can call this person. Yeah.
Well, there's, you know, the Office of Civil Rights is in charge of ensuring students with disabilities have equal opportunities to get education, and also charged with enforcing Title IX, which is ensuring that there's non-discrimination towards either gender. So a lot of the activity and conversations around the Office of Civil Rights have been around some of the sexual assault investigations going on at universities and colleges. So this person coming in, and I say this person because I literally can't remember her name.
this person is fine. This person
yeah,
is fine.
She's coming in as more of trying to address some of the, I think, some of the sexual assault cases and more on the Title IX side. And she does have, I believe she is the lawyer, so she does have experience in that area. But I don't know exactly what side she would fall on. I don't think that a lot of the advocates for sexual assault victims are too enthusiastic. But she has had some track record out there around some of those issues. For ed tech companies, we're still, it's unclear what she might hold for us. We're more interested in around the accessibility conversations around for course materials for students with disabilities. But I don't believe she has a track record on any of those issues that I'm aware of.
Well, why break a plan and have somebody with a track record? Let's find out. You don't say anything. I say it, okay? You don't say anything on that. All right, I'll just empty my spleen on this sort of stuff. It's really bad. By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't say that Rich Culotta, who used to run the Department of Education's Ed Tech Division, was just named the executive director over at ISTE. Did you know that, Brendan?
I did. I read that. I think it's fantastic.
Rich is a good guy.
Yeah, he was just he went from the Department of Ed over to Rhode Island to run some of their education technology initiatives, and now at ISTE, and I think he'll be doing great things over there. So excited to hear what he has to say, and couldn't come at a better time where we're gearing up for ISTE 2017 in June.
That's right. It's going to be great. And Rich, as I always kidded him, Rich Culotta and his wife, Pina. She's Latina. I'm just kidding. It's 9:12 in the morning on Monday morning. That wasn't bad. Give me a break.
I liked it.
Give me a break. Okay, Rich is great. He really is, and I'm going to get in touch with him. Has he started over there yet? Or is it I know he's got the title. And his,
I don't remember what the start date said, but I assume if it's not yet, then it's soon.
Soon. Yeah, he's got to be there.
He's got to take the reins of that conference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ISTE in June. Okay, towards the end of June. The president's budget. Okay, now the president's budget is really kind of, if I may, meaningless because invariably Congress steps in and saves the day. It's called a skinny budget, but they cut $9.2 billion, okay, from education. And, well, what's the scuttlebutt out there on that one?
Yeah, so you know, you hit it right on the head. It's a skinny budget, so there's a lot of detail missing, and that is because this is a new administration. You don't expect a brand new president to come in and be able to take only 30 or 40 days to create a whole federal budget because it's kind of a big deal. So,
right.
You know, if you look historically at presidential budget proposals, and that's what it is, it's a proposal. It's really just the sky is the limit for what it might say or what it might cut or what it might add. Sometimes it's grounded in reality and sometimes it's not, but you can always count on Congress sort of taking a look, having a couple comments, but, you know, essentially discarding it and starting scratch with their own priorities. So I think we're not going to stray too far from precedent on that, but it is pretty compelling to look at what they propose in that budget as priorities for this Department of Education moving forward. Throughout the campaign and even into this administration, we still are not hearing a lot about details on what they really want to do within the education space. You know, you just hear some of those key words like school choice or college affordability, but you haven't heard specific details on how they would achieve that. The budget here does give some good ideas of what they might be thinking overall and where they really value or don't value programs. And like you said, $9.2 billion haircut right off the top.
That'd be a lot of hair on the floor, I got to tell you. It's incredible. Considering considering, and I never understood, you know, I always say this, education is, we used to have the draft long before you were born, Brendan, but the draft, all the guys got drafted into the Army or joined the armed forces, and it allowed us to have a commonality, all right? Mm-hmm. And the commonality today, that's gone. And I'm not saying that's bad that it's gone. It's just gone. And, you know, you went in for 2 years and that's that. But the commonality now is education. Everybody goes K-12. We have compulsory education. And I'm always amazed, and people are so concerned about their kids, that anyone would put up with this, especially, if I may, in our southern states, okay, who seem to want a constant cutback on federal funds for education. All right. But they're the ones that are 45, 46, 47, 48, 49 and 50 in the state rankings. I would think they would be jumping on it. What do you hear from Congress?
You know, we've already heard some pushback, especially from folks in southern states or from more conservative areas, where they're saying some of these programs, you just cannot go whole hog and cut them completely. Looking at the 21st Century Community Learning Centers program within ESSA, that was proposed just eliminate, which is $1.2 billion. And that program provides all those after-school funding, summer programs, parental engagement programs. And there was a lot of rancor coming up from some, not just Democrats, but Republicans and from all walks of life saying, we really support these programs. They're really crucial to our communities.
They are.
And we can't just cut it whole hog. I mean, maybe we can look at programmatic reforms, but this money is critical to our communities, especially if you're looking at communities where they're really reliant on Boys and Girls Club to provide after-school activities.
Right.
That you can't just do that. The other program we see a lot of support for, it might be surprising, is for the teacher preparation and professional development programs under Title II of ESSA. That was proposed to be eliminated, and that would be $2.4 billion gone. Well, every school district in the nation gets a cut of that money, and it goes for teacher prep, professional development, class size reduction. And so we've heard a lot of from many different members of Congress saying, well, no, we really do like this money, and we really do need it, and we need to be supporting our educators if we expect them to actually get the results that we do. We have to actually prepare them. And that goes into some of the other programs that weren't proposed for elimination. We had cuts to the TRIO programs and Gear Up. Those are both services for low-income and first-generation college students, giving them early access or mentorship and career, college counseling within middle school and into high school, and then providing services for those same students when they actually get to college to help them succeed. That cutting those programs would be detrimental to the very values of why we provide federal grants and these services in the first place. So we've heard a lot of pushback. We've heard bipartisan pushback. So I really don't expect that this budget or the skinny budget that came out to be accepted verbatim. You can expect some of them, some of the principles or some of the concerns to be addressed within the actual budget, the actual appropriations, but not to be taken full force.
That's good news, and I hope Congress steps up and does the right thing. Okay, they really need to do the right thing. And as you said it before, especially in the South, I read the other day where 44% of Louisiana's state budget is federal. That's federal dollars that goes into Louisiana, not just education, general. 44%. Okay, and they want a smaller government. Hello? What planet are we on? You know, it's just absolutely unbelievable. Okay, let me ask you this. You know, we always hear the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, all that, they have lobbying. That's why healthcare always gets bogged down, et cetera, et cetera. The lobbyists, one thing, they got a lot of money in there. How's the education industry and the education associations, including SIIA, your ETIN group, the Educational Technology Industry Network, how are they influencing? And I know you do a good job and you stay on top of this, but you never hear about that. We always hear about education cuts, but we never hear about anybody really screaming out about it and lobbying and all that sort of thing. What's the word on that, Brendan?
Oh, well, Larry, if you're not hearing it, I don't know where you're listening, because every education group out there is screaming at the top of their lungs, and they've been doing it for years.
I know that. They do it here. I know that, and they do it here, okay? And they do it publicly. But my question I meant to be, are they really getting their influence across to the people that matter, i.e. our Congress people and senators? That's what I mean.
No, absolutely.
I know they're upset, and I know they're screaming and yelling and all that sort of thing. I don't mean that. I mean where it really counts. The pharmaceutical industry, they can have all the PR they want, okay? But they have influence, okay? The healthcare industry has influence inside Congress, okay? And do we have that kind of voice?
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, the education stakeholder groups, not just us from an industry standpoint, but we're talking about the teachers groups, the principals groups, administrators, just general advocates, the parent groups have a tremendous amount of influence on Congress. They're up here pounding the pavement just like we are, just like the pharmaceutical companies are, you know, pharmaceuticals might have some additional money where us as education advocates, we don't. We do make up for that in our army of supporters, from parents to educators to students, who are willing and able to make calls in when it's necessary, and to vote with their conscience. So there's a tremendous amount of influence that can be wielded, and that is being wielded by folks like the unions, like the teacher representative groups, like the student groups, and like the parent groups up here, in addition to industry. So there's a lot of folks up here knocking on doors and making sure that our programs are being well represented. And I would also say that there's a lot of cooperation between what we call non-defense discretionary programs and stakeholder communities. And that would be anything that's not a mandatory spending program and is not a defense program has really come together to say, we cannot just do these blanket cuts and that would be detrimental to our society as a whole. So that's are like health programs, who are education programs, who are labor programs, who are energy, who are natural resources, interior department. Those types of groups have all come together over the past few years and have said no in a united voice against these blanket types of cuts.
Yeah, and I hope everybody realizes that while the pharmaceutical industry may be stronger than the education industry per se in terms of dollars, okay? There won't be a pharmaceutical industry if we don't have a workforce to fill the jobs,
right?
Okay? And that comes with education.
I would say that there's nobody out there who's advocating to cut education spending. Everyone advocates to increase their own budgets, but nobody, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry or the defense industry or anyone, is saying, well, you should increase my budget at the expense of this budget over here. That's not what anybody's interest is. So nobody's anti-education, but there are people who just have their own interests in mind in getting their own budgets. But typically it's very collegial in some of these aspects.
It's really good. And by the way, I know that these industries are not against education. They'd be fools if they were, but there still is a budget on the table, okay, from the administration cutting $9.28 billion from education. Somebody put that idea into somebody's head, all right? And that's you know, it's out there. Somebody must have the feeling, I don't mean President Trump, okay, but somebody must have the feeling that, oh, everybody wants to cut education, and they don't. And we have to make sure that that we get not only parents, but also the industry and the kids involved, okay? I wrote a column on edcircuit.com. You know, if you don't get your kids involved, the Pell Grants may go by the wayside. Okay, I think that was taken care of. But my point is, you got to get people involved in all this thing. You know, how is the industry, Brendan, reacting to all this? You know, there's not going to be a $9.28 billion cut in education. But what's the industry looking at? I mean, the industry has to do research. The industry has to do marketing. The industry has to create new products. And how are they reacting to this amazing change? This amazing potential change, I should say.
The potential change in the budget?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to make sure folks understand that this is just it's a proposal and it's nowhere near a reality. But there's a lot of concern, especially as we pair this budget up or this proposal up with what's being asked of states under the new Every Student Succeeds Act. We just had
a big
reauthorization of
yeah.
law, which introduces a lot of additional flexibilities for schools in determining how they want to spend their money, but also saying, by the way, you have to still meet your accountability requirements. So as you put all these changes to law in and school districts are thinking, well, maybe I want to look at these new types of products, or I want a change in my student information system or my accountability system that I contract with. How do the companies are thinking, well, how am I going to be able to do that if these school districts don't even have the money, if they're being cut completely?
Right, exactly.
How are we going
exactly.
to support them? But there's a little bit of – there is concern there, but we're still waiting, and we're advocating to make sure that there's not this $9.2 billion cut, that there's not a crazy sort of downshift on the importance of education within American culture and society.
There cannot be that. There cannot be a downshift. There has to be an upshift. We're on a little blue peanut in a giant universe, and that little peanut's easy to get around, so we have to make sure we're number one as we keep trying. What are we, 17 or something now on the PISA scores, and we just got to make sure people understand that. ESSA, you mentioned it, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and by the way, I love the names of federal bills, okay, the Every Student Succeeds Act. Congratulations, guys, okay? And, but what is it, what does it really mean? And there's been an emphasis the last, I'll say 10 years, on STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, all right? And now suddenly, are we moving more to the, I'll call them the softer subjects, okay? Social studies, English, language arts, et cetera. Where are we on all this, especially with all the kids who are in ESL? What's going to happen?
Well, so English language arts and mathematics has been the focus of federal legislation since the passage of No Child Left Behind in 2001, 2002. So one of the opportunities here for ESSA is this increased flexibility to actually determine what the priorities are of your individual state and then even down to the district level. So I wouldn't say that there's a shift away from this, from STEM emphasis or interest in STEM type programs, but there's not a federal mandate saying now you have to put a STEM program at your school. It's saying let's look at what your state needs are, what your state priorities are, and then let's look at what your local needs are and what your local priorities are. So if STEM programs is what you want to do, then there's money that you can use for that. If you think that what you need to be investing more in is interventions within mathematics and English language arts, you're more than welcome to do that. If a priority is your school climate and ensuring that there's a reduction in bullying, or that there's increased
yeah.
opportunities for students to have access to post-secondary educational opportunities within their high schools, you can absolutely do that. But it's saying, let's really look at what are our local priorities. What do our parents want? What do our students want? What do they need? And we can give that to them. So if that's STEM, great, let's do it. If it's something else, we can do that as well. And if it's different for high school students versus middle school versus elementary school,
yeah.
we can absolutely do that. And that comes in with this flexibility under, I'll note this, the accountability system. They added in this optional, it's required, what they call a fifth indicator that's different from graduation rates and different from student test scores on English and mathematics and science exams. But it leaves it open to states and school districts to decide what do they want to measure as part of their overall school grades. And it could be a whole host of different things that could be academic but could be non-academic, like
social emotional,
exactly.
School climate, et cetera. I mean, it's really interesting. But what's also interesting about this is that, and by the way, I like ESSA. Okay, I do like that the states have more control. I think that's wonderful. Mike, let me ask another question, industry question. How does that affect the industry? Because the industry, went after STEM and English, ELA. Okay, that's simple. Math, ELA, however you want to say that. All right, because it was kind of mandated from the feds. That's where the money was. Okay, now it changes to a minimum of 50 different systems. Okay, how's the industry? You know, now the industry has to be more aware and flexible. They have to be raptors, not brontosauruses.
Well, it definitely offers
not that
an
they
opportunity.
I don't mean that. Brontosauruses lasted for 40 million years, so don't worry about that. That's not my point. They were just a little slower, okay, and it was easier. But the raptors were smarter and quicker. I watched Jurassic Park. I'm an expert, okay, in this sort of thing. So my question is, okay, will the industry be able to respond to 50 or more different needs of the different states and school districts?
Yeah, well, I think it offers a great opportunity for smaller, mid-sized companies who might have different and unique types of products to really have an opportunity to shine within this new system by following a lot of what the states are putting down into their state plans. Those state plans are going to be very critical roadmaps for companies who are looking to provide services to identify what are the priorities in individual states so you can actually be more targeted. Because if you're offering more virtual and online learning programs or post-secondary options within the secondary school, but that's not a priority of State A, then maybe you want to say, well, State A is not for me. I should be focusing my opportunities and my resources on States B and C, which that's part of their accountability system. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. Now, that being said, I really don't expect, and maybe we'll find out in the next couple of weeks now that states are submitting those plans, but I don't expect there to be 50 entirely unique systems out there. I expect a lot of repetition, a lot of states still following each other because nobody really wants to be, you know, on the leading edge or really doing something crazy out there or what might be seen as crazy. So I do foresee a lot of people sticking or a lot of states sticking together. And there could still be quite a few states that sort of hold the status quo, that they're just not quite yet ready to take that flexibility on. And that will be incumbent on parents, on educators, on students to actually push their state leaders to say, no, we should take advantage of this and we should make our own unique system. And the industry will follow. We don't create products just for the sake of creating products. We create tools that are demanded or asked of us by educators, by students, by parents, by state leaders. So if you, you know, as they say in Field of Dreams, you know, if you build it, they will come. That's not quite what we do. But if you put it in your plan, we will come to you.
Yeah. It's a good industry. I got to tell you, it's a damn good industry. I got to tell you that much right off the bat. Where are you going today? I know I'm going to let you go in a minute. Where are you heading off to today?
I'm headed down to the Lone Star State, to the great state of Texas. We're going to have some conversations around ed tech and student data privacy down there. Should be interesting.
I did a show just actually you would enjoy it because you know a lot of the people on it. I did a show on Friday about internet and internet safety, data privacy in schools, what parents need to know on the Education America podcast. Okay, and it's really interesting when you get down into the deep on it. Okay, and parents need to be very concerned about that, but the industry and the school districts are taking care of things. Is there something coming up in Texas, or is it is it just a generic meeting, so to speak? Is there a reason
it's a hearing of the state legislature. So they have some proposed legislation around student data privacy. That's pretty good. So we're just going down there to support their efforts in strengthening student data privacy protections and doing it in a way that doesn't limit opportunities for students. So Texas is looking like they're going to pass their legislation. They got so close in the last session, and then they just ran out of time. So I think they're going to get it done this year. And, you know, it's one of those oddball states where they only meet once every 2 years the second
That's
largest
right.
state in the union. So
and their legislature, it's an interesting state because their governor does not have a lot of power. Okay.
Right.
It's more the lieutenant governor and the legislature doesn't meet that often. It's a very interesting state. Very good look at civics in that state. I wish them well. Okay, because they really got to take care of this. The world is changing ed techs out there. Brendan, keep up the good work. Keep nagging all those people in Washington, all those staffers you meet and the Congress people you meet to support education. I know you do that, and specifically ed tech.
Thanks, Larry. Can I put a quick plug in here?
No, you cannot. No, I'm awfully sorry. That's illegal. No, go ahead, please.
Wanted to say, if folks are interested in just reading a little bit more about the budget, the proposed budget from the president, I do have a nice blog up that's pretty summative of that skinny budget and what's in there, and you can find that siia.net/blog, and you can find it under my name, Brendan, as the author. So if you're looking for a little bit more information on the budget, it's right there for you.
And I wish you had told me that before the show, so I would have looked at it, so I would have actually sounded intelligent when I did this interview.
Well, I didn't want hardball questions from you, Larry.
Right. But you have a safe flight down to Texas. Okay,
thanks, Larry.
Enjoy Austin. Terrible music down there, bad bars, bad food, not fun at all. Don't have a good time, whatever you do down in Austin, okay? Thanks, Brendan.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome, buddy. Bye-bye. I'll see you soon.
Bye.
Brendan DeSetti. Brendan's the director of education policy. He knows his stuff for the Software and Information Industry Association. It's better to say SIIA. And then they also have the ETIN, the Education Technology Industry Network. Okay, so it's really good stuff. Check it all out. Brendan knows what he's doing. And thank you, Brendan. On a busy day when you're flying the heck out to come on the show, I do appreciate it. The industry, check out MCH Strategic Data, mchdata.com. You want to, with all these changes, you want to reach the right person at the right time. Okay, they have all kinds of information on the industry, the profession, et cetera, and they can get you to the right people. They tweeted MCH Data. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, and we tweet at EduTalk Radio. We'll send out another direct link. I can't talk today. It's Monday morning. I'm Larry Jacobs. We got another show at 10:30. Perhaps my tongue will work better. Thanks, Brendan. Everybody, listen to the next show. It's going to be a good one about how teachers are working together to influence everybody. Thanks a lot.